Welcome to the Digital Rapport Podcast, where you discover how to connect, influence, and persuade in the digital age.
Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome to the Digital Rapport Podcast. And today we're going to have a wicked conversation with real good friends of mine who I've known for years. And what we'll do, we'll go around. So in the yellow corner, we have Sifu Lakloy, who's author. He's a third generation Bruce Lee's martial art instructor, an amazing, amazing individual. And in the red corner, we have Magic Marilyn, who's an international speaker, author, Hero okay. Success Coach. And then in the blue corner, we have the business tycoon, Suki Wahiwala, who's an international speaker and human behavior expert. So we've got an awesome panel today, and I'm super excited to just share everybody's insights around this topic of spiritual egotism. Let's just see where this goes and have a good flowing conversation. So the whole topic about spiritual egotism, I suppose the first time it kind of triggered a thought within myself was probably when I saw a speaker who I'd been following for a while. You know, they're quite well known. I'm not going to name any names or anything. And saw them speaking on stage. And yep, good conversation. You know, they pass on the message, share the light and stuff like that. But then when they got off stage, the way they were was very different to what they were projecting. And then later on, as you got to know them a bit more, you started to think something's not quite right here. It doesn't match up, because what they're sharing in regards to spiritual knowledge, there doesn't seem to be a congruency there. So, and it's not just in those kind of situations. It happens in many situations across different, kind of genres, situations, scenarios. So I was just kind of intrigued to pick everybody's minds about this and why it may be that we are projecting this spiritual element sometimes, but then we're not always aware of what we're doing or grounded in that manner. So anyway, it's open, and let's just see where this conversation goes.
Well, I would definitely like to jump in on that one, because this happened. I heard somebody say that statement to me, but for the opposite reason. It was probably 2003/4. I'd just done a talk at Kensington Olympia if I say the name, you get the wrong idea. I did a talk for Durex on relationships, because they wanted to be more than a one night stand. They wanted to give a more rounded view. And there was, 1,000 people in the audience, and I was signing books and selling my coaching CD. And somebody came up in line and we had a chat, and then she said, gosh, you're the same off stage as you are on stage. I said, oh, thank you very much. And then somebody else said it. And by the time the seventh person said it, I said, excuse me, do you mind if I just ask you a question? I said, you've just said something that half a dozen people have said. Can you tell me what you mean by that? Mm-hmm. And she described what you just said. She said, well, often I see people on stage and they're open and they're friendly and they're funny and they're this and they're that. And then you meet them off stage, completely different, as in almost unpleasant. And then I told her the reason for that. And I said, look, it will be too much work for me to be having an onstage persona and an offstage persona. I think I just better be myself. That's probably going to be the easiest way to go through the world, such that if you see me on stage or you see me on TV or you hear me on the radio, I'm going to be exactly the same if you meet me in the supermarket. But it was really astounding that so many people pointed that out. I was almost like, what is going on here? So that was the first time I became aware that people ran multiple personalities, you know, because I'd made a conscious decision not to, because I just figured it would make my life easier and I'd rather just be authentic and all round. So that's the first thing. I've got plenty more to say, but I won't now. But that's my first thought as you share that example.
Yeah, no, awesome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. That's just interesting. Suki.
Yes, yes, amazing. So I completely connect with what Marilyn's just shared there. There are a number of individuals, in fact, a vast majority of people who are on stage and off stage have totally two different personalities. It's because what's happened is that over the years, I suppose this is just a humble opinion on this, by the way, over the years, what's happened is that they've kind of crafted themselves on stage. So they've become a different psychometric, a different sales or a connector on stage, if they aren't naturally that. So just as a conversation, internal nature, external profile. For example, you have an external pattern, what you call it, profile that you show up in the world with, and you have an internal natural and adopted. So in their nature, they tend to hold themselves a little quieter. So if they're what we classify as somebody who's a bit more of an introverted energy, they will create an extroverted energy for the stage, for the presence under the format of training. Because if you're quiet and non-transference of any kind of knowledge or energy on the stage, then what will happen is people won't listen to you, won't engage, because they've got their own stuff going on. The key here is to understand that you can sharpen your personality by you can amplify parts of your personality on stage, as opposed to being something completely different. And that's what happens when you come off stage. If you're being a Jekyll and a Hyde, you come off stage, you kind of crash. It just crashes the whole principle. You can tell this straight away. What you were just sharing, Marilyn, there, and how the introduction comes, and I'm very certain Lax can say the same. The principle of knowing people coming off stage, being completely different. I believe this is one of the biggest pandemics we've actually got. Everybody's becoming a stage personality and becoming what I call and I mean this in a very humble way, but accidentally losing their own essence. Mm. They're not becoming themselves on stage. What Marilyn was saying there specifically was, I think I just, it's easier being myself. And that's the bit that we've got to start to get into. So it's like I suppose in one way, Jitendra, I'll just say, it's about being comfortable with yourself and then amplifying the sections of yourself to communicate with people, but never changing the inside. So I was speaking once upon a time just on a mixed stage, and somebody, and this, but please do understand, this is not at all in an aggressive or a sort of like obtrusive sort of way. But somebody was speaking on stage, and Jitendra, you were with me that day. We were on stage, and the person openly said, very, very big marketeer, openly said, this is my mentor, and I'm actually going to give you access to him. I went on stage, and I spoke in a completely different way, because I spoke how I do, I suppose. And I think we nearly two-thirds, basically, of the room signed up, and there must have been 300 people in the room. So there was no sell. There was no run to the back of the room. Everything that was being done at that particular time, there was none of it. But people just seemed to come up and say, we really want to work with you because we've realized that you're not pushing anything on us. I went, oh, crap. We weren't even ready for it, if you remember. Mm-hmm. I had no pens and papers. I said, great, no problem. I'll tell you what we'll do is let's create a sheet now. So we have to adapt. The point was that there is no point in having two personalities because you will get stuck, such a duality. You'll get stuck. When somebody asks you a question in your private life, that you might ask a personal question, somebody might bark at them, have a go at them, that kind of thing. The key here, I believe, I'm just going to pass it on to Lack or whoever, is that we've just got to align with our inner natural psychometric. And that's one of the keys. Just a little roundhouse.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Lax, what are your thoughts on that?
No, but really, really strong, powerful points, guys. From masters like yourself, I wouldn't expect anything less. But I think just to kind of build upon the foundations that you guys lay down already is, you know, when you're talking about spiritual egotism, I think for the audience, you know, that are maybe new in this field or on, you know, everybody's on their own path and in various stages of their development, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, I think it's always good to remind people, right, so what is spirituality and what is egotism? And the spirituality, the ultimate essence behind spirituality is to connect to source, is really kind of step into your true, authentic, higher self, as I call it. And when you do that, it's in a real alignment, not just with your body, but your mind, your emotion, and your spirit. And a complete alignment with your higher self. And when you align to your higher self, this is, you know, you've got your physical body, you've got your mental body, you've got your emotional body, and then you've got your spiritual body. And it's part of ourselves that we don't seldom, a lot of people in general don't cultivate. There are obviously those people that are on that journey, that are cultivating it, that may fall into experiencing spiritual egotism. But the irony is, as they go through that process, they won't be aware of it. So on the flip side, it's egotism. Well, egotism is the illusion, right? And in Sanskrit, we call it, and even in Gurmukhi, we call it Maya. Maya means the illusion or the illusory self. It says we create and project this image and persona of who we are, but actually that is not us. It's we are really the not self. The not self is a spiritual self, the formless form. And you know, you might have heard the expression, you know, we are spiritual beings on a human experience. And you know, on that spiritual quest, the idea is to realign that. So when you do realign that and you start to connect and self-realize your true, authentic, higher self, there's a natural synergy that starts to happen with, firstly, yourself, but also with everybody else, because you're no longer going to operate on a physical level. You're no longer going to operate on a mental level or even an emotional level. You're above that. You work on an energetic level. When you work in an energetic level, and you know, both Marilyn and Suki talked about speaking on stage and having a persona, and Marilyn beautifully summed up the essence of all of that is when you're actually acting through your true authenticity, your true authentic higher self, as I call it, then what happens is you energetically connect with everybody and they feel that. And that is the same offstage and onstage. And the authenticity there means that if you are creating a fake persona and trying to connect with somebody, you're not really connecting with them because you don't really understand it. Why? Because you're not really being yourself in that projection that you're putting out there. So there's this kind of divide. So Bruce Lee talked about this, and he talked about the art of honestly expressing yourself. Now, you know, he said, honestly, to be honest with yourself is really hard to do. It's easy to be cocky and put on a show and be all flowery. But to really be honest with yourself, it requires you to really know yourself. And to really know yourself requires a lot of work. And spiritual cultivation is part of that. And essentially, when we talk about spiritual egotism, what we're talking about is a stage of that spiritual development process that people experience, and everyone's going to experience that on that journey, and is being aware of it. And people that do suffer it are not aware of it, right? It's that unconscious incompetence that's happening.
It's amazing because it's so relevant, even though we're talking about spirituality. I mean, we're talking about being on stage, and even like in the online space, you know, when you're doing these kind of things, you're on stage, aren't you? Because you're basically talking to an audience. You might not be able to see them. So, you know, the way you come across and how you're projecting yourself and how you're able to connect with our audience in the online space, it sounds like it's so connected to your honest expression of who you are, right? Do you reckon we should have a little distinction between what is the ego, and is it really spiritual egotism or is it spiritual pride? Because from my understanding, ego is like you were saying, it's kind of your identity of your kind of sphere of you made, whereas pride is like, I'm the man kind of thing, right? So what are your guys' thoughts on that? Lax?
So it's funny you say that. Actually, I've got a koan that I wrote, and the koans were written through my own experience, and the koan's called Spiritual Pride. In my mind's eye, my humble opinion, there is no difference between the ego and the pride. The pride is just one manifestation of the overall ego. Okay, therefore, it's just part of the whole. I'd like to read a little extract. I'd like to read that koan, if that's okay to share.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this is from my book, The Art of Thinking Without Thinking. And spiritual pride, what I've written, and I'd just like to share it verbatim, is when one is on the path of spirituality or self-realization and thinks he is superior to others, I call this spiritual pride. It is a contradiction to this true spiritual insight and an affliction the younger initiate usually experiences on this journey, oftentimes involuntarily. The shedding of the ego is still in progress, and it takes time to recognize the ego and dissolve it away until true spiritual humility can be attained. This is all part of the process of ascension. So be gentle on yourself and others.
Fantastic.
just wanted to share that.
Lax, I think Suki, you had your, I think you raised your hand there before.
Yes. Thanks. Apologies, Marilyn. I know you're really gagging to get on there. I can see the energy is like, oh my God, this is such a cool topic. I just feel as though right this very moment, Lax is talking something, right? And he's, and Marilyn is sharing something, and then you recap it as well. For me, I want to do the specific thing that happened in Way of the Dragon. You know, when at the end, when he sort of sits there fighting Chuck Norris, you got Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris, and then all of a sudden Bruce Lee's getting battered because he's trying to be something. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he starts to flex up and starts to jog around, jump around. And I'm thinking, I feel like jumping up and down. I'm thinking, what a great thing. I've got three of my greatest friends on here having a laugh and a joke. The best things happen when we riff. There's something really specific that was shared there. And if you don't mind, everyone knows me, and I'm synonymously connected with Gurbani, which is the Sri Guru Granth Sahib Ji, which is core to the Sikh faith. And I find that it's a very open, natural way of conversation. That what Lak was just sharing a second ago with that nothingness, which is obviously the core heart of Buddhism. When you look at Buddha and the whole Buddhism principle is to get to the inner box, the last sanctuary, the last box, the high sanctuary. When you open up that box on the outside, it can be polished. And it's a beautifully crafted, polished, engraved box. But when you open that box on the inside, it's the roughest, splintery box finish that there is on the inside. This is the natural bark as it is. And that's the real aim, the place of selflessness, isn't it? We're talking about spiritual egotism. We're talking about not being something. That's the key, isn't it? Mm. Because if I'm sitting here thinking about what I've got to say next, I've already engaged the spiritual egotism, haven't I? I've already engaged a self. I need to say this. So I'd rather rift and just play. And in principle of that would be, there's a particular extract. Do you mind if I share this? Anybody hasn't got an objection with me? If I just share
it. Go for it, man.
Yeah? So it's Mera Mujme Kich Nahi. Jo Kich Hai. So tera. So if I can explain that for you, Mera is me, Mujme, within me. Kich, something, but also in this case, nothing. Nahi. I have nothing within me. Yeah. Jo, which is whatever, Kich Hai. Whatever I have within me, sotera. Sotera is yours anyway. Okay. So the principle behind this is the evolution of understanding, the principle that we are nothing more, nothing less than just simple conduits. Mm-hmm. And the moment we realize that we're just passing something on and it's not mine, like today, this isn't Suki. I'm just going to share whatever the world's taught me and whatever I've managed to hoover up, what I've learned from Marilyn, what I've learned from Lak, what I've learned from you, Jitinder, and the world as well. And this is what we're trying to sort of pull together, I think, something along the lines of that. But that whole spiritual egotism, the whole principle of breaking that ice within oneself. If I have to honor myself in a conversation, there's the egotism sitting there again. It's back to me, isn't it? And so the principle I was going to share. Can I just share, where are we looking for this oneness? Yeah. If I can just share something that I was actually coming from my evening prayer. And in specific, it was by our ninth guru, which is Guru Tegh Bahadur Ji, and in the Sri Guru Granth Sahib Ji, chapter or page 684, in specific, and this is the English translation of this, it says, just like the fragrance resides in the flower and the reflection in a mirror, deep within oneself, the divine resides. So brother, in this particular case, we're talking to an individual. So brother, search within your own heart. That's exactly principally what we're all trying to essence within ourselves, isn't it? If we look inwards, we can't find us besides the oneness. Wherever I am, you cannot be. And wherever you are, I cannot be. Mm. And it's like we're looking at spiritual egotism now. There, just one final point before I'd rather rift across it and hear lots more from everybody else. I'm going to learn from you today. There's a lovely conversation I was having. I have it quite regularly because it helps one reset themselves. And with myself, we pick up stuff, okay? So we're all human. We pick up stuff. We start to wear on top of our own clothes. We start to wear our body. We start to wear clothes. We start to wear, you know, nice-looking tops or whatever it is. So even that has an essence of pride, pride being a representation of ego. And ego within itself is needed. All the seven sins are needed. You don't want to eradicate them. You'll have no self-identity. Mm. We require all of them. We just need every single faith on this planet, the faith of no faith even, just says monitor it and keep it in check. So this in check can only be done on a cyclic format, if I can humbly say, that we need to have something that resets us, whether it's daily, whether it's 10 times an hour, whether it's whatever it is, once a year. Something needs to reset ourselves just to reside back into the vessel of the oneness of the divine that lives within us. Okay. Mm-hmm. So just final conversation and say, the difference comes when somebody says, can I use, if it's okay, I suppose you could say vegetarian and carnivore, you know, carnivore or meat, not meat, or veg meat, or non-veg and veg, whichever.
Or vegan now as well. You know.
Yeah.
you sound like a restaurant menu now.
I know, trust me, I'm going to make you hungry. I've been drinking coffee here, so I'm all good. The conversation is this, that it's not about eating meat or not eating meat. It's about assuming the identity that if I do eat meat, I'm better than you, or if I don't eat meat, I'm better than you. The assumption is the problem. It's the believing of being something special, caste, which is special, that just because I don't or I do, it makes me better than somebody else. Yeah, I'm just going to open that conversation. That's what we're trying to unpack here, aren't we? We're trying to unpack something of that sort of nature. And I'm gagging to listen to Marilyn, so go for it. That's all I want to share. I'll jump back in later.
Seriously, there are so many things that you've all said that make me go, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow. And when I came into the conversation, you guys were talking about Clubhouse and having a meeting.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Clubhouse highlighted to me is it feels like a dance of the ego, because there are times you go into these rooms and you're like, ah. And so I've been really mindful of just sitting, going into the room, just sit. Just listen. Yeah, you can raise your hand. You can go on stage. Can do that for sure. But it's been interesting to watch the egos playing out. It's been interesting to see the interplay when it all got too much and it was all, and you're just like, wow. But for me, that was almost a lesson, a 2021 lesson in the play and interplay of the egos. And it's very easy to see them in the rooms. And my first time of even hearing the term ego, and I did A-level psychology, I was 18, and they talked about Freud and the id and the ego. I then came across it again in a big way in 2005 when I did the archetypal journey, because Lack had mentioned the whole idea of the journey, and it's broken into three stages. And the first stage, and starting with the innocent and the orphan, that those first four stages are about the ego, but not in a bad way. It is just about coming to the realization of self, getting to understand the world and your place in it. And then when you move into the next stage, it's like, oh, it's not all about me, because the ego is about the self, really. So everything that you were saying was amazing. And then coming back to where Jitendra started this conversation, the reason I decided to authentically be myself was because of fear. Because I realized the very first time I was being mic'd up to go onto a big stage, when she says, oh, Marilyn, we'll mic you up in a minute, the fear suddenly just descended over me. And I was like, whoa. And I remembered the training I'd done the year before with the NLP, etc. And there's a thing called anchoring. So I thought, hold on a minute, I just noticed I've got a negative anchor to the microphone. I was absolutely fine. Then she said, we're going to mic you up. Then I went rabbit in the headlights. So while she was getting the microphone pack, I stood there and I thought, I'm going to anchor myself in a different way, such that when I see the microphone coming and somebody clips it on and says, are you ready? I'm like, I was born ready. And let's do this thing. And then it was like, okay, let's go. And coming back to what you said, Suki, about introvert, extrovert, in terms of Myers-Briggs type, MBTI, Myers-Briggs type indicator, I am off the chart introvert. Well, I remember when I first did the test.
What?
No, I am. And a guy called Vince, he did the test. He's ex-army, ex-military, very thorough. And he sat in the room with me and he said, what were you thinking when you filled this in? I went, what do you mean? He said, it's off the chart introvert, because he'd known me now as Marilyn, the speaker and the trainer. And I went, yeah. And you're, and he went, well, that can't be right, surely. And I went, but Suki said it's about the facets. So I learn how to enhance a facet of my personality when I'm working. But my natural state is just to be an observer. So the two, I think, can interplay very beautifully. And when you come to that question about pride, I think, from my perception, it's the almost like the man-made manifestation of the ego, which is now we bring our human personality into the mix. But I don't, but I think the ego sometimes gets a bad rap and slightly demonized when it really is just the beginning of self. And that question, I mean, years ago, I designed an on what was it? Ignite Your Brilliance. So it doesn't matter what it was, but I designed an online program. One of the questions, I think it was on day five, was who are you? But I wrote a statement, a caveat, over and above being a mother, a father, a sister, a brother, a teacher, a doctor, a lawyer, a friend, a confidant, an aunt, an uncle. I said, aside from all of that, who are you? People were in tears. They were ringing and emailing and messaging because they couldn't answer the question, even though they were in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, couldn't answer the question. And I realized then how big this thing is about our identity. And there are two words which have transcended time to the point where no one has been able to fully identify where they came from, although they're on those, they're on the etched into stone in Rome. Two words: know thyself. I think it's a lifelong journey. Seriously, I think it's a lifelong journey. I'll stop talking there.
Oh, it's great. This is amazing. I'm just loving it. Don't you think? I think we need one of those little punching moments and just keep going.
Definitely. It's awesome. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Suki had his hand up. We'll go to him in a second. I just wanted to put something out there. Like you mentioned about Clubhouse and the clash of egos and stuff like that. You know, another question after Suki's had what, you know, there's a clash of ego, but what do you reckon drives that? Like, why does, they're in that environment, but yet there's this thing going on. Like, is it a me thing? Is it a greed driven? Like, what do you think is driving that?
Okay, so I just want to add something to what Marilyn was saying. It's just spot on. It's about we're talking about what, Black was talking about cultivations, and we're all talking about principles of understanding that I would like to say that we require all our sins. We just need to keep them in check. There are certain things, like, for example, one of the things I always talk about, which we've been, I think, Marilyn, when we shared our statements a decade ago now, can you believe that? How long ago?
I know.
Isn't it? The Millionaire Mentor days. Anyhow, so when we started delivering those sort of things way, way back, then one of the key things that always came out was one of the conversations that we have. We think negativity. I'm not going on to your question there, Gary. Just a bit.
No, that's cool. Later.
The negativity that we produce within ourselves because of the misalignments that we have. You know, we don't align with oneself. We don't have any alignment processes. It doesn't make a difference whether you think meditation's hippie-ish or whatever it is. It could be just breathing. Could be whatever it is. Whatever is your thing, you just need to use whatever stimulus you want to just align with oneself. The question that Marilyn was talking about when she specifically said that, you know, people were sitting there in tears, because they really couldn't define themselves. It's because no one really shines a torch inwards, do they? And that's the key. All faiths, in my opinion, and I do mean the faith of universal humanity, the faith of universal humanity says, learn yourself. Learn yourself in this journey. That's all it's all about. That's why I've dedicated so much of my time now onto internal psychometrics, because that's basically the unlock key. We can sit there and we have a perception of everything in our life, a perception, projection. That's the easiest way to put it. But my perception is my perception, and it's right for me. And what we've got to understand is that what is right, not necessarily just right for me, right for somebody else, not my version of it. I am entitled to my version of the world, but how can I truly align and serve if that's what I want to do in my life? If I'm trying to connect with other people, we talk about rapport, digital rapport, all those principles that you're talking about once upon a time, Jatinder, it can only happen when you pull self away, when you get yourself out of the way. Lack was talking about connecting to the higher self, and you automatically connect to your audience. Absolutely, because we're all one. And if you connect into that quantum soup, then the only way, there is only one theory, there is only one line of code, and that is connect to self only. You know, get out of everybody else's way, forget about your frameworks and who you are, what I've achieved, what I've learned, what I've been, become, what color hair I've got, etc., and just become your soul purpose, your soul self, which is what Marilyn talked about specifically once upon a time from years ago. We just become one. All of a sudden, we start to connect and rapport's disappeared. It's like rapport's just there. Rapport is only ever created, or you know you're in rapport. If you know you're in rapport, you're out of rapport. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So if you're aware of rapport, you've already stepped out of rapport. Wow. The whole purpose of rapport is when time is lost, is when you've gone into a heat of a moment and nothing makes sense. I've lost time. I've lost feeling in my hands. It doesn't make any sense when I'm freezing cold, where I'm thirsty, where I'm just in the buzz. That's when we're in rapport, when we have none of myself. That's basically a little thought I wanted to share. Mm-hmm. One of the key things is that people have negative thoughts and we think they're bad for us. Well, sometimes negative thoughts are those little guidelines, those little principles that keep us on track of finding oneself, looking inwards. If I give a little example, if we're going into let's say we're going to a jungle and we walk into jungle. Marin and I used to share some stage when we were together. You walk into the jungle and I always coin the principle that negative feelings or thoughts are actually positive thoughts, just that we've got to see them in the right light. They're trying to tell us something, okay? And it's always the unconscious self. The unconscious self is your genie, per se, which always produces what you want it to produce. Yeah, it will always say, okay, if I said I feel bad, then, oh, hang on a second, I need to make you feel bad, right? That's what the unconscious brain is trying to do for yourself. It's always there in service. Apologies if I'm over talking a little bit, but I'm just sharing the core, which I think has got to be shared over here, is that I want, whatever I want, whatever I ask of myself, my body starts, my soul starts to produce it for me. Whether I think of it as I always see what I would like to see, or I always believe whatever I want to believe, and if I believe it is true, yeah, then it's true. Whatever those principles are, I'm aligning with something and I have a version that I believe is true, and that's what I'm going for. So if I ask myself to produce something for me, it will start to do it. The law of attraction principles, yes? So we talk about law of attraction. And one of the things I was sharing just in one of my business boardrooms just on Monday, I think it was Monday or Tuesday this week, was very specific that people think that there are inflow, aligned, not aligned, all these sort of things. No, you're always alive. You're always on some kind of a task. The clarity is that you will feel, because I believe genuinely that destiny is already pre-written. That probably abrasive to some of the listeners that tonight, but today, but destiny for me is already pre-written.
For another time for a podcast, yeah, definitely.
That's right. Destiny is already pre-written. And I only feel aligned, egoless. When I'm aligned, I feel egoless. When I'm aligned, when I have those spiritual, what we're talking about, the issues we have in spirituality, when I'm aligned. And I'm only aligned when I let go of what I expect of something and align myself accidentally with what was already in my destiny.
Mm.
So it's like, there's the line. It's already running through. There's the timeline. If you imagine timelines going forward or crossways, whichever you choose, it's already going somewhere. Either I turn around and accept that timeline and I move along and I feel as though I've achieved something. And being here today is a part of that achievement. This was destined. We've been talking about this for 2 years, maybe plus, and it's happened. Yeah. And now we feel as though it's great. Oh, look what we did. You know, we've got together and we've done this and that. No, we didn't. It was in destiny. We were supposed to be together and bash our heads together. And
just unraveling it. Now that's fascinating, Suki, because that's like the thing about your will aligning with divine will, because if divinity knows what's best for you, then it's already, it's almost like just aligned with it. And it's just, you know,
awesome. We've got our next week, haven't we?
yeah, definitely. Laxi, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to just build up on what's been said so far. And, you know, as JT mentioned earlier, you know, I'm a teacher in Bruce Lee's martial art. And one of Bruce Lee's processes is, as I mentioned earlier, his process of learning. And actually, he called it the three stages, and he called it the stage of innocence. And this goes back to what Marilyn said from her psychology days. The initial stage is the stage of innocence, right? Then there's the stage of sophistication and the stage of emptiness. Now, the stage of innocence is where you don't know any better. It's the unconscious incompetent stage, right? And the idea in that when you're in that stage is you're just doing what you're doing. You don't know any better. You're just carrying on as you do normally. And whether there is, you know, ego manifesting as pride or whatever else and exhibiting itself in different ways, shapes or forms is there. And, you know, I think somebody asked a question. I think it might have been yourself, JT, is, you know, what are the different faces of ego? Well, there's many. right? And it's essentially from, and martial arts is teaching us this, is teaching us spiritual cultivation, mind, body, motion, and spiritual cultivation. And what we're seeing as part of that is actually the ego is is a defense mechanism. And it's a defense mechanism for insecurities and traumas and a whole bunch of other things that are happening or happened behind the scenes, buried in the unconscious mind. Your conscious mind is aware of some of those things, but it's forgotten the root causes of them potentially. And this defense mechanism is playing itself out to protect the inner self. It's just a critical faculty protecting yourself in different ways. So you're, when you're in a stage of innocence, you just do what you do. In martial arts, when you're first learning to learn a martial art, you're just going to move the way you move. It's untrained behavior, okay? And then the second stage, the stage of sophistication, is beautiful, actually, because what you start doing, you start going through that conscious learning stage. And, you know, if people have studied the four stages of learning in psychology, that there's two stages as part of that, which is the conscious incompetence leading to conscious competence, right? So you start off cultivating techniques, for instance, if we just refer to it in a physical combative development sense, and you start getting better over time until you know you're getting better, okay? And now the spiritual egotism sits in there, right? It sits in there, and a bit of it goes into the third stage. And now the thing about the stage of sophistication is, it's because you're in your mind, and because you're in your conscious mind, everything's overthought, okay? Everything's mechanical, everything's robotized, okay? And then the thing is, you've got to put the work into it, and you've got to have, you know, people will say practice makes perfect. I don't believe in that. I say perfect practice makes perfect. If you learn bad movement and just do loads of repetitions in it, essentially what you're going to do is be really proficient at bad movement.
Bad information,
yeah. You need to do perfect movement and repeat that again and again and again, so that when you need it on hand, you're unconsciously, your, as I say, your second sense or your reflex is going to be perfect movement, right? And then eventually you get onto the third stage, and that third stage is the stage of emptiness. And the best way to describe that stage is, you know, is to use a bike, right? In the stage of innocence, you don't know how to ride a bike, right? You're not aware you don't know how to ride a bike. You don't care to ride a bike. And it's okay not to ride a bike because it's not in your mind. The second stage of sophistication, oh, you got the bug to learn to ride a bike. You get a bike, you're given a bike, you borrow a bike, somebody teaches you how to ride a bike, and it's very mechanical and clunky, and you have to learn, somebody has to learn, you know, take you through that process. Shortly after you do learn to ride, it's still very mechanical, robotized. And then eventually, 6 months down the line, you're riding a bike, you're not even thinking about riding a bike. Same when it comes to driving a car or anything, right? It becomes unconscious. That's the emptiness. So you let go of it all. Now, when it comes to spiritual egotism, it sits in the middle between the second and third stage. And I'll tell you why I think that's the case from personal experience, that is, is that, and the best way to describe this is to use a Chinese proverb. And the Chinese proverb says that, you know, before enlightenment, you chop wood and you carry water. Okay. During enlightenment, you no longer chop wood and carry water. And then after enlightenment, you chop wood and carry water, right? Now, for those of you thinking, what the hell does that mean? Well, initially, you just do the work that you need to do, and there's nothing more to it. But when you're going through this process of cultivation and spiritual development, or any development in any area, but this is specifically kind of, you know, focused on the enlightenment and spiritual cultivation element itself, is you overthink everything. This is your stage of sophistication. Now, chopping wood is no longer chopping wood. Every time the axe hits a piece of wood, now you're thinking, oh, you know, am I hurting the piece of wood? You know, am I in the right angle? Is this, a better angle? Whatever it might be, you know, you'll over-calculate everything. Then eventually you realize, right, you know, you attain that insight that you need, right? As they say, the wisdom is illumined. So you have that enlightenment, when you have that enlightenment, then what happens is there's a process of completely letting go of it. And therefore, you just end up doing what you were doing before, right? But with a new illumined self, which is weightless, okay? It's buoyant, it's light. And this, and Suki said something really beautiful earlier on, and I don't know if, I hope the audience caught on this, is that spiritual ego is a natural process, right? You know, this is why in the Quran I said, you know, be gentle on yourself and others during this process, because it's all part of the process. You know, you have to go through that. And, you know, even our gurus will say that, you know, and spiritual masters will say, you know, ego, if used for the self only, is not necessarily a good thing. But when the ego is used to serve others, it, with a playfulness, because you know that there is an ego and you can play with it, but you're not attached to it, that becomes a whole new thing. And that's your emptiness, right? Because it's there. You can bring it up. You can have a little play with it, and then you can drop it or just chuck it away, and then, you know, return back to the emptiness. And that is what I would say is part of the spiritual maturity process, is the spiritual immaturity and the spiritual maturity. So what I want to do is, and I've been thinking about this while I've been sitting here, is because there's loads of different ways that this manifests itself. Question to you is, how does spiritual egotism play out in the real world? How have you seen it? We've mentioned that we've seen it on the stage, where you've got on stage persona, which is this whole built up personality. And then behind stage, you know, from the sounds of things, people sound like dicks. Okay, right? Because they're not aligned to themselves. And I'm just going to say it as it is, right? Whereas, you know, how many other different ways have you seen spiritual egotism play out? So over to you guys.
Is that a question to us?
That's a question to you guys.
But me, there you are. Look,
everybody.
The sheer fact that I'm standing here, sitting here, thinking, oh, there's something to share, within itself is the paradoxical conversation. I am in spiritual egotism somewhere along the line. I think I have something to share. So that's me. That's my resignation. Full stop. Stop the mic. I'm standing there thinking, it's me. I'm the one who's the ego one here. I'm standing here.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's the same. That's exactly what I was thinking. For me to do what I do, there is some element of ego to that, because otherwise I'd be everywhere. I'd be sitting there quietly in my innocent orphan stage, or just, like, you know, discovering the world, and nothing would actually push and drive. So
yeah,
if I were to then claim I had no ego, you or Matty know I'm lying. So I don't think it's the absence of, and that's why I said previously, I think the ego gets a bit of a bad rap, because whenever you hear the word ego, you suddenly think of all of the negative connotations of that. And actually, it is the thing that would move me from hiding in the shadows and in the background, where I spent the first 32 years of my life, into actually this is, and some of the things I've done, it has been because my ego has gone, you could do that. Go on, say something, put your hand up, go for it. And that, and one of my favorite pictures of myself is the one that is still my Facebook background picture. And it's an aerial shot of me on stage at Kensington Olympia. And I was speaking for Psychology's magazine. And then they had, like, the early very, because this was about 2005, six, something like that. So it was the early version of the drone where the camera would be overhead. But the reason I love that picture, number one, there was a whole backstory to it where the team from Psychology's got stuck on the underground and we're going live and there's like 3,000 people in the audience. And I was meant to be on third, but but everybody else is together. So now I have to go and change the whole deck. And so I'm briefing this team that I'd never met before. And I'm kind of now redirecting the whole thing. But what was really interesting about that, I was speaking to all of those people, and every single person that came up for the 3 days that I was there said, when you were speaking, I felt like you were talking just to me. And that was like, whoa, that's really, but what Lack was saying with that whole thing about higher self, alignment, etc. And for me, that blends in with intention, where my intention is that I'm going to speak to your soul. So that means whether there's three of you or 3,000 or ultimately one day 3 million of you, you're going to have an experience which is unique for you. So for me, that's a really big part of it. But the whole thing about ego, I definitely have one, and it comes into play. But there are times where I know I'm flipping into what I'd call the shadow side, if you talk about it in terms of archetypal profiling. Mm. And when that happens, it's never a good outcome. However, yeah. when it's just the piece to say, Marilyn, come on, you could help here, you could do something here, that's a whole different ball game. But I think we all have one.
Can I add something to that? You know, Marilyn, you smashed it there. The bottom line is this. What I think everyone's smashing it, by the way. But when I said right at the start, as I said, the scriptures say something specifically. You're not there to remove any of these seven sins. Mm. You're there to meditate, to maintain them, just to be aware of them, because each one gives you the value. I mean, our all scriptures do not say become solo, don't have relationships with people, etc. Obviously, that can quite quickly become wrong as well if you're being promiscuous, et cetera, et cetera. And even that's culturally accepted or not accepted. But my point here is that ego, yeah, spiritual egoism. So even yesterday, I was talking to somebody specifically in one of my mentoring sessions with someone, and we were talking about, I suppose you could say, I think all of us here have experienced our children or our children who are between ourselves, who are getting older. So obviously they all talk about Marilyn as Auntie Marilyn, and they all talk about Lack as Uncle Lack and Uncle Jatinder. So if I can just specifically just allow myself to talk a bit about those four children, and even this within itself has to have an element of ego, hasn't it? Because I can't give you the identity, can I? Mm. There's no framework otherwise. Nobody can represent or reflect or even connect and relate to something if there's no me and I in a conversation. Whenever I talk about something, I always say, what I explained earlier on, whatever I have within me is not mine anyway. So please use the word I just to resonate and ground the conversation. So there's a positive anchor for ego. You know, just have it there. But I will constantly remind myself, this is not mine anyway. Even when I use the word I, I'm going to give you an example. As soon as I've said I, the key, I think, is to catch yourself, isn't it? But not distract yourself. Catch yourself. And then as soon as you finish the point, then share it straight away and say, I'm just letting you know, by the way, I use the word I, but it wasn't for me. It wasn't coming from me anyway, because none of us have created any of our knowledge. We've all we've taken our versions of it. And I'm learning so much from us all together. We're kind of vibing, jamming, whatever you want to call it. And I think I'm looking forward towards the end when we just sort of like forget about waiting for each other to talk and just go, bleh, and then the one conversation I'm going to give you with reference to my children, if I can leave you with this. I once shared, and it was actually in our Sikh entrepreneur group, if you remember, Jatinder, when we were talking about, it was in the Inspired Dinner Club WhatsApp group. And I shared that it's always good to have an identity. For example, having your children to have a named identity. For example, we have Wahiwala, which is my surname. So there is a Wahiwala way. You remember that, Marilyn? There is a Wahiwala way of doing things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'd rather this. We just unmute ourselves and just talk, because it's too long. Because there's so much love in this air that I want to just keep connecting. I tell you, I want to get into that. Let's just spa, because I think it's a better way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to lose against Lax, but there we go. You know, I'm going to get punched. At least I'm in virtual environment, so don't get hit. the conversation is just the Wahiwala way, you know? I put out there that you should always teach your children to have an identity, mm-hmm. not ego, and uncultivated, using your word lack, I would say unchecked ego. I'm saying they need an identity, because if they don't have their identity, their mirror neurons are going to constantly look at somebody else and just become whatever else everybody else is. They'll be further and further away from themselves. So, you know, when we have a herd of, we call it a herd, let's just say a herd of sheep, yeah? We put a flock of sheep into a pen and we put a fence around it, yeah? Most people have the perception that the fence is there to keep the sheep in. And actually, that's the least of your problems. No, it's not at all. The flock is not, the flock will always have herd mentality. They will always follow one or two people. If one starts moving that way, the other two to the right or the left will start moving that way. And then the other ones to the right, left, and they just all just move one way. We've got a flock mentality. The real purpose of the fence is actually to give maintenance to the field so that it doesn't just get overeaten or not eaten enough and not balanced enough. And also to keep out the predators. Mm. Does that make sense? So we're putting the fence there to give a parameter of service to create something of value within our own needs, of course, but to keep out the predators. Instead of trying to keep the sheep in, we're trying to keep the predators out. So that framework is what I call the identity of your family. So us, as I was brought up by my mum, God rest her soul. So she basically brought me up in a very strong understanding of what is it to be a Wahiwala? What is it to be? So this is, you're a person who doesn't womanize. You're a person, you're a male, obviously, because you're a male, right? You don't womanize. You don't do this. You don't do this. You don't do this. You don't argue with people. You don't, you basically just try to flow with people and you stand for the right. The right meaning the truth, okay? And guess what? You're a business person. You will always have the hand of earning money. You'll never forget that because that's one of our seven generations. Now, there's a learned understanding, but it's an identity, but it's also an ego, isn't it?
Mm.
And this is the power of the positive ego. If I didn't have an ego, I wouldn't brush my teeth. If I didn't have an ego, I wouldn't dress. If I didn't have an ego, I wouldn't be on this call. If I hadn't no ego, I'd have no friends because I'd have no value to self at all. So ego is necessary to contain yourself, to give you the identity. So the Wahiwala way, or the Wahiwala brand name per se, was there. And somebody challenged me on that because in accordance with Sikhism, do apologize here just to clarify again, they said in accordance with Sikhism, there is no supposed to be the ego. You're not supposed to be ego. And then I gave them the reference point of our 10th guru, which is Guru Gobind, and said, actually, it was the, we stand as one and apart. It's the same. You still have to have your own identity as the Khalsa with the turban, the whatever else. So we look different. So we can be identified in a big crowd. But then we also stand as one with everybody else and the right, the truth. I said, so you've got to be a saint and a warrior, not just one. You have to both of them. So I've seen your hand up there, but I'm just going to share that we need to give our children or the next generation or human beings a parameter that serves them. We have to give them those ethics and understanding so that they can actually, when they feel jelly-like, they can mold themselves and sit into this sort of space where I'm not going to fall on the floor because I'm in a chair. And then when they've recollected themselves, they can stand back up again. Otherwise, we could actually go into the wrong vein. This is my personal opinion in a humble way. Over to you, Chitinda, but you've got your... Here, I've got my hands.
Yeah, no, no, that's fascinating. That's so fabulous. It actually reminds me of... like to know more about this, about how when Bruce Lee was asked about, you know, what's your style? And he gave it a name. And then when he gave it a name, he realized that, oh, he's just created another style now. And so he, but it was that paradox thing because it's like he had to name it in order to create the identity around it. Otherwise, it would have been lost, right, Lex?
Certainly.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting stage in Bruce's martial process development because, you know, the process that became branded essentially as Jeet Kune Do, he didn't want to give a name to, but when people were talking, especially interviews, and you know, he's a big a TV personality and been interviewed quite frequently at that time, people were asking him about that. So how, you know, the thing is, you know, Suki taught me this, is that, you know, we're meaning making machines, and therefore we need to label ourselves with something. We need to have labels to identify a thing. So if he was to say, look, Jeet Kune Do is really about, you know, adapting to whatever is by using whatever's most efficient at a given moment in time, laying down some principles and philosophies for economy, form, economy, motion. That means to do whatever you're doing as efficiently as possible to incapacitate that and dissolve that situation, right? At that given, any given moment in time. If you don't have a name, how, you know, people didn't latch onto it, didn't connect with it. So he decided to give it a funky name. And it was a name that was inspired by something that he was going through at that time. And then later, you know, him and one of his closest confidantes down in Santo, they would drive down the road and they, you know, they'd see something, so something that they thought was really cool. They'd be like, ah, that's got Jeet Kune Do, man. That's got Jeet Kune Do, right? And Jeet Kune Do became a name for something that was kind of a model of excellence, something that was up there, right? And if they saw a nice car, they'd be like, that's got Jeet Kune Do. If they saw somebody dressed like, that's got, he's got Jeet Kune Do, she's got Jeet, whatever it was, right? And then later he regretted it because it's like, do you know what? Now I've given it parameters, I've given it boundaries, and I didn't mean to, because it's supposed to be. And the best way he described it was, Jeet Kune Do is like being at the center of a circle without a circumference.
Mm.
Go where you want to go, right? And so it became something that it wasn't. But you know, the thing is, there's the ego for identification part of it, which is one aspect of it. The spiritual ego is you know, in my mind's eye, is that ego that represents itself when one's on a spiritual journey. And the question that I was posing earlier was exactly that, is how does it manifest itself? And you know, from my personal experience, because I went through those processes, and you think, you know, this doesn't feel like enlightenment. This doesn't feel like, you know, spiritual transcendence. And, and what it felt like was, I know something. If I tell somebody, they're going to think I'm a cocky git, yeah? Right, I'm egotistical, right? I think I'm better than them, so I didn't say anything. And then when people asked me about it, I was shy to say some stuff about it because I didn't want to give them my spiritual insights and the things that I'd seen, because I had a perception that they would think that I'm better than them, even if I don't say anything. And what happened was, when I didn't say anything, I thought I was better than them. Mm-hmm. And this was people that were working with me on that process of cultivation. And I was like, what the hell's going on here? Then you get to a point where you're like, okay, so I've got all this wisdom. I need to share it. So then you go through a process of frustration. It's like, I need to share this, people. Why aren't people listening to me? What's wrong with you lot, right? Right? So you go through that. All spiritual egotism. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you realize actually when to dissolve it, you have to just learn to be in the flow with it, because that's all part of the learning. But it's very overwhelming when you're going through that. And when you're going through that, it's this is why I was saying in the Koan, you have to be gentle on yourself and you have to be gentle on others. And when you become gentle, there's a complete letting go. Okay, is what we call the art of dying without dying, right? You have to just, learn the art of dying. You just need to kill everything, right? Kill all of these identities, kill this notion of yourself, and just get into the flow and just swim in the ocean of consciousness. Then what happens is the students that want to learn, they will appear, right? And the people want to hear your message. They will ask. And when you need to serve somebody, they will just pop out of the blue, and you're like, okay, this is a person I need to serve. And then what happens is, Suki mentioned this, and Marilyn's mentioned this, is you get to a state of seva, which is servitude, right? And it's selfless servitude. And the selfless servitude is no longer about I, because I doesn't exist.
Mm.
And it's just about, you know, I like to say, you know, giving is the new taking. Okay. And there's also studies around this that have also shown that when you give, right, you get back multifold. Now, in our traditional teachings, and my mom's always taught me this from a young age, and having gone through the schooling system, you know, almost deprogram and question, Mom, what were you talking about back then? I've come to realize, and actually apologize to Mom, actually you were right all along. You knew all of this Vedic knowledge, all this ancient traditional knowledge, and even though you didn't have the science or the reasoning behind it, it was carried on because you've witnessed it and you've experienced it, but it's hard to explain the unexplainable.
Until
it actually happens. And this is part of the spiritual process that people struggle with, is that you want the proof before you put the work in. Sorry, you're not going to get that, right? You're not going to get that. I call it like setting, you know, making jelly. You know, everyone loves jelly when they're a kid, right? And the problem is, when you make jelly and you stick it in the fridge, right? Every 10 minutes, you're going to go in and put your finger in it, right? Mom, it's still liquid. Mom, it's still wet, right? Well, the problem is, right, you keep opening the damn fridge, right? You need to close the fridge and leave it, let it go, and it will set. And that's kind of how it works. You just kind of trust it, the fridge is going to do its job. And the universe is a bit like the fridge, all right? Your intention is the jelly, all right? You make it, you put it out there, and you just let the universal fridge take care of it, and it will gel, all right, and happen. So I think Seva really is the ultimate expression of that. And it's a process.
Do you know what's fascinating about that, Lex, is that what I'm also getting from this is that the ego seems to have a dual side to it as well, right? So everybody's mentioned about, like when we put this title up, most people may think, oh, ego negative kind of thing, right? But when they actually listen to the conversation, they're going to see a whole flip side about how the ego is actually like a parameter, a identity, a container, right?
It's your friend, right?
It's your friend. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you relate to it, then you can keep in charge of it. That's right.
Definitely. So it's got the whole kind of yin yang process built into it as well, right? So share your thoughts about that, the dual aspect of it, because there was a time when I would have looked at something and thought, oh, this guy's being egotistical, this and the other. But over the years, learning from like yourselves and learning about how these things work and stuff, it's a totally different reframe now. When it happens, when I see these things, it's like, oh, that's just where they are on their journey in life. You know, they're just stuff that they need to sort of learn and get on with. So it's fascinating to see that. I just wanted to mention something I came across the other day. I think it was a guy called Ken Wilber. I was listening to something he put together, right? And he was sharing about these four levels. I can't remember all the levels, but basically he said that there's lots of people have the experience of waking up, but very few grow up, right? And what he was talking about, what he was saying was that, like, there's a level, I think the first level was egocentric point of view, where you have an experience based on, like, it could be your religion, it could be just your community or whatever, something going on locally to you, right? So you have the experience of feeling oneness. But because it's come through those filters, there's still this element of us and them, or they don't quite get this because I've experienced it through this way, but they don't get it. And then the top level was, I think, cosmocentric, I think he called it, right? Where he said it gets to a point where you can have an alien landing and he'll have tentacles and everything out of his mind, but you'll still look at it and think, no, it's a sentient being, right? So it's all good kind of thing. You know, and the thinking of the ego is like just at a higher place where it becomes more inclusive. And it's that thing you were talking about, levels as well, right? So the different levels, when you seem to achieve something, then you've got a new set of challenges that come with that next level. But what are your thoughts on that? Like, how do we move away from the kind of local ego level all the way up to a cosmo level where it's become more exclusive, right?
Can I just reframe this conversation just a little bit more and say, just add something to it, that I just genuinely believe that it's a cycle. And I think every single thing that we learn and live has to go through the same ego cycle. Otherwise, we don't make any sense. There's something called the CUC, which is the conscious, unconscious, consciousness learning loop. Okay. So this is basically, until we've actually consciously trigger something, we unconsciously learn the journey or whatever we're going to go through, which is and then we have to self-reflect, which is the consciousness again. And unless we've made that cycle of consciousness, we can never learn anything anyway. So I'm fully subscribed to what you just shared there with the hierarchical conversation, where I believe every single minute, every single day, every single second that we live, we should be going through the same conscious CUC loop, the learning loop. And only then do we ascend, because we were talking earlier on about the moment you're conscious about something, then logically ego has to be a part of it, because you're in consciousness, okay? When you're in the unconscious state is when you're actually truly possibly egoless. And if you know you're in an unconscious state, then you're not in an unconscious state. Does that make sense? So it's kind of like, it's a paradoxical conversation, but it's the principle of following, in my humble opinion, following those three steps to an extent in everything you do. So you're just constantly on a routine of understanding the CUC, the conscious, unconscious, consciousness loop. You check something, you think about it, you contemplate it, and then you confirm and affirm what you've learned from it. And this is the only way you can, I suppose, you can say ascension. Mm. I suppose you can concentrate on it. But at every single level, in my humble opinion, once you've connected to the unconscious, you're already in that cosmos level on anything you're talking about. Because what we were all talking about, what Marilyn was talking about, what Zach was talking about, you're talking about Jatinder, is the moment you connect to self, you connect to everybody, right? Mm. And that's the cosmos level, the quantum soup. Sorry. Over to you.
Yeah, no, go for it. I think, Marion, did you want to say something on that?
Well, it's an interesting one. You know, coming back to, you know, what both Lack and Suki have said, and actually Lack, that's where we first connected. It was at one of the Inspired dinner evenings, and I was talking about photo reading, the accelerated learning, but you immediately recognize the resonance between the stages that you do when you're teaching martial arts. And then when we mapped it across, I remember you did that electronic mind map of your process. I was like, yeah, that's the same as photo reading. It's just got different names, because it is all about those. And it starts with that whole learning cycle where you've got your unconscious confidence where you don't know what you don't know. And then suddenly you realize what you don't know. And adults tend to get frustrated by that stage. And then you start learning, you become more competent, and then you move to the stage of mastery. However, it's a continual cycle, because if you've already said, as you hit against a new level, other things will start to kind of come forth. And in terms of that sense of duality, I can't think of many things that haven't got two sides, you know, and in the archetypal world, you call it shadow, you know, rather than positive and negative, because immediately you say negative, oh, it's a bad thing. But it's just that there's a shadow side to everything. And where that becomes a problem is if the shadow side goes unchecked and unexpressed and doesn't have a voice. Because I could say, oh, the lover archetype, being a lover is a good thing. Love for yourself, love for humanity, love for other people, building relationships, da, 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 da. But the shadow side, if you've ever seen the movie Dangerous Liaisons with John Malkovich, that is the manifestation of the shadow side of, let's say, the lover energy, where they are cruel and nasty and, you know, setting traps for people, etc. So for me, it's when these things don't, because every single archetype, the orphan, the caregiver, the warrior, the destroyer, the jester, the sage, whatever you want to put in there, the creator, on the face of it, they all sound great, and they are. But if they're unexpressed, it doesn't matter which of those 12 archetypes you speak about. They all have a shadow side, which can be negatively expressed. So it comes back down to that thing of, we're back to know thyself. And when you're the problem comes when you're really knowingly repressing something and choosing not to give it a voice. That's now where it's like the jack in the box, where it's waiting. It's waiting for the opportunity to just kind of, you know, burst out. So there are so many levels and so many layers to this thing, but it's I know when I'm saying something from ego, and I know when I'm just authentically sharing something, and then I will make a decision. And as I said previously, when I make the decision to do from ego, I actually feel bad afterwards. It leaves a taste in my mouth. And I'm like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I hadn't said that. But I can't now let myself off the hook. Because I'm like, you knew what you were doing because you felt it. So I'd say I feel it rather than, you know, I just feel it. I just know when they're different places, but there's a place for everything, because it's who we, it makes up who we are. And Suki, you said it earlier, if we didn't have these kind of aspects, then we wouldn't be human. I think all of these things make up the human psyche. And the trick is, I'll get back to that analogy of the dance. The trick is the interplay of them all and how they all fit together.
Wow, this is amazing. I'm just looking and thinking we could go on forever, right? This stuff is so phenomenal. I really appreciate you guys sharing, and I'm hoping that the listeners are getting value from this as well, right? So
I'm getting value from it. Forget anybody else.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm here as well, you know.
Oh, wicked. All right, so I think what we'll do. I mean, there's so much we covered. I think we've answered each other's questions and whatnot, and so I'm just gonna leave it open to you guys to say you know, your kind of last few words around the topic, and anything you want to share in regards to that. So we'll start with Lax, then we go to Marilyn, then we go to Suki, and then we'll see what happens after that. Go Lax.
Thanks, JT. So I just wanted to conclude with we were talking about the stages. I think spiritual egotism, you know, will appear itself along the stage of that spiritual process, and that, you know, this, I think if you were to kind of make key milestones within that, you've got the initial starting point, which is you're asleep. The second step, I would say, you're awakening, right? And a bit like in the morning, you know, when you're coming out of bed. The third stage is you're awake. And the final stage is you then, you can't go back to sleep. Because once this spiritual awakeness is, you know, once you're awake, that's it. You know, you can't go back to sleep. So then you've got responsibility and obligation. And the obligation is, you know, I like to, and I was speaking to Suki about this earlier this week, is when you're awake, you're like a lit candle, and you therefore have an obligation to light other people's candles, to spread that light. And I will just give you the pinnacle of spiritual egotism example, and that is there's many rishis, right? Rishis being these spiritual masters and saints. Some of them are, you know, ascended, and some of them are still working on that process of enlightenment and attainment of that, that reside in mountains. So they sit in isolation in these mountains, and there's many, many rishis that are enlightened masters, even ascended masters sit amongst these mountains, such as the Himalayas. And it was Guru Nanak. There's a beautiful story about Guru Nanak. Actually, he went up into the mountains. Now, what you need to realize is Guru Nanak himself was married. He had two children. Okay, so he was a family man. And he was one of the first enlightened masters that said he went up into the mountains. He got those rishis, talked to them, and he said, "Hey, what are you guys doing here with all this knowledge of the cosmos? And you sitting here in these caves, hiding away from society. Go and spread your light." Right, so he put them down, right, and got them out there into the communities, sharing this wisdom to light other people's candles. And that's ultimate seva when you're doing it selflessly. So I wanted to share that because I think these rishis that sit in the mountain, there's a level of spiritual egotism there, because they don't want to mix with anybody, because they're on, you know, they feel that they were on such a high level in self-isolation that, you know, they're almost untouchable in their own way. And I think there's a certain beauty to that, because you can reach such a high stage of spiritual cultivation and still be missing it. But the actual, you know, before enlightenment, you chop wood, during enlightenment, you no longer chop wood or carry wood, and after enlightenment, you chop wood or carry wood. You know, you get to that point where it's just do what you normally do on a regular basis, but also help others, you know, learn how to chop wood or carry water as well. So I'm going to leave it on that one, guys.
Awesome. Thank you. Over to you, Marilyn.
Well, I'm now thinking wax on, wax off. Perfect. Because that was the ultimate in bringing some of these principles to the attention of the masses. I still to this day love that scene. And just to say, I think, you know, one of the things about it, because when Jatinder said, okay, let's all summarize, seriously, the ego part of my brain, if we want to put it that way, oh my God, I better come up with something good to say. How do I summarize the conversation? And I was like, oh, for goodness sake, because if I'd sat in that place, I wouldn't have heard a word that Lack said. Because now I'm off on another tangent going, okay, well, I could say this and I could do that. And maybe if I, and I'm like, oh, for goodness sake. And so it's almost in my head. And on Facebook, I've got a hashtag that is called hashtag my other brain, because there's two of us in there. And there's one side that will have an idea, and then the other side comes in and says, for goodness sake, Marilyn, really? And then it will, and I go, oh yeah, you're right, actually. And then I'm like, okay, let's be present. So I'm going to say that part of this whole thing about the ego and self, if people haven't yet explored it, I would say maybe start looking at the journey of the ego, the soul and the self, because it is absolutely fascinating. I would say identify where you are on that archetypal journey, because it runs through eight stages, and it starts with the call, where you feel a sense of discomfort. And like Lack was saying, when you cross the threshold, if you allow yourself to go beyond that point and get to the abyss, you at all stages, you have a choice. You could run back to before the call and pretend that you don't hear it, but now you know. But if you carry on, eventually you get through the whole thing, transformation, etc., and you come back to the kingdom with your gift. And that's where, as Lac was saying, you come back and you shine your light. So I would say the invitation is there because the information is out there for people who actually maybe want to go on that journey and identify where they are. And I would say in terms of how all of what we've been talking about plays out in our daily lives, we used to say this back in the day, I'm from South London. We'd say, check yourself. And what that meant is if somebody was getting too, you know, in your face, you know, coming, being confrontational, we say you want to check yourself. And what that means is you look at where you're coming from and you look at what drives you. And when you know it is from that place, which is the dark side, if we wanted to go a little bit in terms of sci-fi, then that's where you make a conscious decision and become aware of what you're about to do next. And be okay with the consequence of what you're about to do. But I would say, you know, self-reflection, getting to know yourself better. All of the scholars who have studied Know Thyself have said it is a lifelong journey. And some of them said they may get to the end of this life plane and still not completely understand the self. But actually, I'm going to enjoy the journey. I'm going to enjoy the ride.
Wow.
Right, Marilyn, wasn't it go check yourself or wreck yourself?
Yes. Oh my gosh, I didn't even know you'd know that phrase, Lac, but yes.
I think it's in some hip hop rap song somewhere as well.
Wow. Suki?
Yes, sir. Oh, wow. I've been nothing but listening. That's all I'm interested in. I'm just like going, oh, I like that. I like that. I like that. Like that. I'm just going to be really, really. I think basically the key here is to give yourself a break, in my opinion. In my humble way, it's like, look, don't overanalyze everything we're talking about. Look at me, look at everyone. We're sitting there giving everybody frameworks and structures and stuff like that. Actually, the journey is very simple. Just check yourself, as you're saying, Marilyn. And I don't think if you don't check yourself, guess what? You won't wreck yourself, because the bottom line is that you just won't know. You know, you just won't know. All I'm saying is it's a cycle. It's a cyclic scenario. The really, really core thing is that have something in your life that you can at least use. As I said, right at the start, I'm just cycling back to the original conversation, just to reset yourself. Have something there for yourself, whether you know, just to look inwards. I mean, come on, 99% of the people around here, we don't even know there is a torch. We don't even know we can even shine this in the darkness. We don't even know there is a darkness. We don't even know there is such a thing as light and dark. And the reality of things is we have our own perception of them. We're creating our own versions of the world, which is why all of the rishis and the gurus and the teachers there keep telling everybody that at the end of my feelings is there's a prayer called Jap Sahib. And I start with whatever I have within me is not mine in the first place. Yeah. And like the flower and the scent, like the reflection in the mirror, God, the divine is within you. Go and search for them. The bottom line is, in my opinion, is that the moment you resign yourself to realizing that I'm a learner, which is the whole principle of the Sikhism, it's not Sikhism, because ism was added in 1902. It is just Sikhi, which is basically a philosophy. It's not a religion. And the philosophy is fluid. And the philosophy says, just become aware of yourself in that moment. Decide by returning to center, by turning to truth, to understand, does this feel right? Is this actually good for the person I'm about to speak to? Is it valuable to them? Is it valuable to me? Is it destroying something, or is it creating something? Are we evolving somebody something? Am I feeling better? We like to talk about seva, zakat, tithing, all these principles, okay? All of these are the same thing. Why is it that every faith, whether it's the spiritual faith within all of them, says one thing, that when you give is when you truly receive. And all we've got to be, guys, is check cyclically, because you're never going to be in ascension all the time, and you're never going to be in ego all the time. Well, you can be, but you're never going to, you have to be in cycle. Just accept it and roll with it and say, oh, self-check. Marilyn was saying, you know, in that moment, just think back and think, oh, I wonder what that was like, you know, talk to your second brain. All those principles we're talking about. The bottom line I would like to just leave with in a principle is in a very clear form of how I live my life, if I may. And that's not right for anybody else. It's my version of the world. Korzybski, he says very clearly in Science and Sanity that the map itself is not the territory. So the map being my brain per se, my version of the world, my map, which I add every single second, every single day. I'm adding some more data to it, making it more topographic, much more rich within the information. But they're all my assumptions. And they're my assumptions that will stay with me. My version, all I've got to say to everybody is respect the fact that your map is your map and not somebody else's. Remain humble, remain humid, flexible, spar with yourself, for crying out loud, you know, just flex, dance, just be, you know, when you live life as though no one is watching. Just be a free flow somebody, but always check in with one line. Even when you dance, you have a framework. You know, there's if I can leave a lovely visual inside your head, we talk about salsa dancing as being the most dancing. You can do what you want to do and be what you want. But even there, there's frameworks. When I move forward, you move backwards. When you move forward, I move backwards. When we move to the right, I move to the left. There's still some framework there. The rules are still there. Look for your own rules. Look for your own ethical base. Be a good human being who can cyclically check on oneself. And the checking is always going to subjectively change as you move up your mountain. And whether it's your first or your seventh makes no difference. The point is, in life, you will go through a process where you will start to think, where am I? All you've got to do is, whenever that happens in nature, in natural time, is when you're about to shift from one mountain to another. Is you're going round and round and round and round at the top of that mountain, and you're thinking, something's not happening. I'm not growing. I'm not feeling. Just remember, team, the key, if anyone's listening, if I can share in a humble way, the team is to realize that I'm actually a student of life. And I have nothing really, but I have something at the same time. It's paradoxical. And I just want to be, I want to give myself, I want God to bless me, the divine to bless me with the ability to react quicker in that moment and catch things that don't serve me and don't serve the world so that I can be conscious about it and just reset myself. And all I'll say to everybody is just don't be spiritually egotistical. That's the bottom principle. There we go.
Wow, guys, I am surrounded by greatness. I appreciate you guys. This has been fascinating.
Kinder, you know, hang on a second. You're not getting away with it. What's your answer?
I was just about to.
And Jatinder, before you do that, because I'd like you to have the last word, can I just say one tiny little thing in terms of the way I always start my workshops, whether it's in person or online? One of my favorite sayings from Huna, H-U-N-A, for those of you who maybe haven't come across it before, there's a slide that I have at the beginning of all my workshops. It says, think not that all wisdom is in your school. And I've been using that since I went out to Hawaii in 2005, because basically what it's saying is, you might think what you're doing is the best thing since sliced bread. You might think that your idea and your philosophy is the best ever. Actually, there are so many other schools. There is a wealth of wisdom, and Huna is predicated on the correspondences, where they are looking for the correspondence between what they're saying and the other. So it's all connected. So I start all of my workshops with that. So I'm going to share some things with you, which I think are great. And they are true in this moment in my model of the world. And all of the wisdom does not reside here. So I just wanted to end where I normally start my workshops. But yes, Jatinder, over to you.
Absolutely.
Can I
amazing.
Say one thing, please? I do apologize.
Go for it.
I really want to add something. It's so stimulating. Yes, Marilyn, you said something. It's wonderful. And I'm going to go Nanak's philosophy, if I may, because for me, I have chosen that path. And that's my version of the world right now. And if I can just reflect something from that version of the world really quick. His principle is really simple, that we are... If we can imagine us all to be a droplet of water and we can catch our ego, that's what we're talking about. We're trying to catch our ego, reframe ourselves in that moment. That's what I ask as a blessing for everybody. But if you can imagine we're in the sea, right? So sea, we have no brand, no name, no nothing. We're a part of the sea. And each particle of water is a part of the sea. If you can imagine we're evaporating and we become a part of a cloud, the ecosystem moves us over. And logically, what it does, it takes us from the big seas and moves us over to high ground, which is the mountains, and the temperatures drop. And then logically, it rains down. So if a particle comes from the cloud and lands on top of a small droplet, lands on top of a mountain, it sits there and it finds these little puddles every now and again. Yeah. Whether they're half hours pre-incarnation, I don't know. But they're sitting there, it builds up, and until it overflows, and then something drips out. So one of those particles, drops of water, drips down further down into the mountain and becomes a bigger puddle and it becomes a piddle, becomes a pond, becomes a pond, goes into a little overflowing stream. And by the time the stream comes down into the ecosystem, which we understand as multiple ways of coming down the mountain, it ends up in a river ecosystem somewhere on the line. And the reality of life is that each one of those ecosystems, whether it's the Nile, the Thames, the Amazon, etc., and many others as well, Ravi, Ganga, etc., all of those ecosystems are all still flowing, are they not? The beautiful thing that comes to my head, and this is what I think I try to live my life with, because I'm seeing all of us here as an ecosystem within ourselves, as every human being is. Whichever ecosystem you are in, just be that ecosystem, because this is just the journey that we're taking in this current life. And by the time the ecosystem of the river goes through its estuary, ends up in the sea again, as soon as it enters the sea, it becomes nameless. No one knows which particle came from which sea. And then we just go through our evaporation again. If we get back at the top, we end up there and we live another life. And there's a gentleman called Sant Singh Maskin, who's a Sikh philosopher. And he said very simply, he goes, wouldn't it be an awful world? And we're talking about egotism and spiritual egotism. I say religious egotism as well. Wouldn't it be an awful world if the rivers could actually talk, and all they did is bicker amongst themselves and said, which river is the best river? Seems quite endless in the conversation and pointless as well, because by the time it's in the sea, who knows what's where. Anyhow, lovely conversation. Jitendra, your version of that.
Wow. No, it's fascinating. Thank you, everyone. It just reminds me of actually something I heard Bruce Lee once say. I could never find this documentary, and so Lax might tell me afterwards, yeah. But basically, he said that if you put the students of a martial art in a room together, they're going to fight and bicker over everything. But if you put the masters of an art together in a room, they're going to agree on everything, you know? And just to hear that was like mind-blowing, because that just goes to show that getting stuck in the way, like Marilyn was saying, getting stuck in a way, you could be losing out so much possibility and opportunity in life, you know, just because you think there's just one way of doing things, and that's not really the case. And this is what inspires me, because I'm so inspired to connect with, you know, people like yourselves. You know, everyone's doing things in a different way, but yet there's a common, you know, connection between everything, and you can learn from all of it, learn from everyone. And that's what I find fascinating. So it's like, you know, you don't think one way is the only way, right? It's there's loads of schools of thoughts out there. There's lots of information out there which you can assimilate and make your own. And what I want to leave you on is just something my dad said to me once. He said, you could read all the books in the world, but your brain will never be full. Right. And I find that fascinating. I'm thinking, whoa, imagine that. But imagine how many books there are in the world. Yeah. And how much information is in those books. Yeah. There's information out there we don't even know about. And I'm just thinking, wow, that's a cosmos, a galaxy in itself. Right. So go out there, learn and inspire others. And I appreciate you all. And thank you very much. If anybody wants to get in touch with Lack, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best thing for them to do?
Just go online and visit www.martialmindpower.com. Martial as in MARTIAL.
Fantastic. And Marilyn?
I'm going to say it and then I'll spell it. It's www.transformationstm.com. Trance is TRANCE. Formations, F for Freddie. So FORMATIONS and TM as in trademark. So transformationstm.com.
Awesome. And Suki, if anybody wants to get in touch with you.
Well, I can't dream of anybody wanting to get in touch with me, but if they just Google my name, Suki Wahiwala, you can see it there. It's SUKHIWAHIWALA. Alternatively, obviously you'll go into all the websites, but I'd prefer people to just watch the content. Go onto YouTube and literally www.youtube.com/ Suki Wahiwala. Should take it to the channel and you can communicate with me via any of the messages and I'll pick it up.
Awesome. And if you guys are watching, then you can see the names on that side, right? And if you're listening on podcast, we'll put the descriptions we'll put the links in the description. So thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Digital Rapport podcast. To check out the latest podcast and blog post, make your way over to www.digital-rapport.com, where you can discover how to connect, influence, and inspire in the digital age.